Stu Does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Be sure to hit the subscribe button, click the bell for notifications, watch a couple of cat videos, whatever you do on YouTube, watch someone fall off a skateboard, down a ramp, and get decapitated. It's all the fun of YouTube, and what more could you ask for? Drew Holden is here for a roundup of some of the mainstream media's worst hypocrisies. We'll take a quick look back at the first year. It's been 1 year. I will say, it's been 1 year of Donald Trump, a second term. He has packed 27 years of a presidency into it. It has been a lot of stuff has happened in the past year. We're going to start, though, by doing the truth about deportations. That's one of the things he's packed in to this first term. Hatred! Hatred for immigrants! Deporting every single brown person. Did you know? Only white people are left in the United States, and it's only been a year. Soon, no more women. And then we'll only have Nick Fuentes. That's how this ends, everybody. I hope you're ready for it. White House is going to cut funding to sanctuary cities and states on February 1st. Yeah, it's right around the corner. Sanctuary cities. I mean, this minor policy of just ignoring all of our federal immigration laws in certain cities might be going away, or at least they're losing funding, and that could pressure some of these cities to go away. That's the goal. And, you know, again, you know, because these cities don't have to help. They don't have to assist their actual efforts against the federal government in these matters are a real problem and likely illegal. We'll see how the courts look at that. That's the way they've looked at it, generally speaking, before, even when there's been immigration policies that we've really liked and we've wanted the states to help. And they've just ruled that they don't have to. So we will see how that all plays out in the you know, months and years to come. But I wanted to bring your attention to the immigration system, situation as a whole. We talk about this generally sometimes, but really more it's about specific cases. Oh, this case where this woman was shot in Minnesota or in Portland, or there's been this guy, this father of four in Maryland, who's thrown out to an El Salvadorian prison and then came back and that whole thing happened. We talk about that stuff a lot. And we have seen, I will say this, if you care about the election, you care about how people who don't agree with you think, right? That's an important part of this. And as you look at what people who don't agree with you think, what we're seeing is a group of people, a decent chunk of Americans, have gone from last year supporting Donald Trump's immigration policies and this year not supporting them. Why is that? There's a real gap there. And this has turned favorability ratings away from Trump at some level. He has, you know, his big strengths in his first term were the economy and his approach on the border. That has generally changed. This time, the economy is not seen as one of Trump's strengths. And this time, the border, while people agree, generally speaking, on having a secure border and approve him, generally speaking, as to what he's done on the border, what they don't like are these raids that make all the news. They don't like it. And they keep pushing back against it and saying how terrible it is. What they do like this time from Donald Trump is his foreign policy. That is a very popular part of Donald Trump's platform. It deserves probably its own show to go through all of those different things. But when we're talking about immigration, I want to make sure you understand what the truth of the matter is. Is this man the most hateful person of all time? Of course, the answer to that is yes. Obviously, I mean, it's Donald Trump. Of course he is. How many people has Trump deported so far? A zillion is the answer to that question. It's the only appropriate answer. 1 zillion. And you want some real hatred numbers. Let me give you some. This is the New York Times. So I'm going to give you the mainstream media view. They're looking at this and they want to break this down for you to its most organic level so you understand exactly what's going on here. Over the past year, President Trump's administration has deported about 230,000 people who were arrested inside the country and another 270,000 at the border. This bastard This is according to a New York Times analysis of federal data. The number of deportations from interior arrests since Mr. Trump took office is already higher than the total during the entire 4 years of the Biden administration. Oh, you hear that? The number of deportations from interior arrests higher than the total during the entire 4 years of the president that was in office and couldn't speak or stay awake for more than 15 minutes. Can you believe that? It offers the cleanest measure of the impact of Mr. Trump's immigration crackdown and the expansive efforts, remember that, expansive efforts to fulfill his campaign promise to deport millions of people. It's a sad time. Sad time to be American. I hope you are ashamed of your country because of all of these deportations. You've seen them all over the news all the time. Anytime someone, ICE rolls into your town, we know it's a massive controversy. We know they're removing just innocent people with no criminal records whatsoever or something like that. And by the way, they have graphs to support how horrible this has been. Here you go. Chartapalooza a little bit today. Podcast listeners will walk you through these graphs. What you see is the number of deportations of people arrested inside the country. And the previous peak you see back in the Obama administration, 2012, and that number was about 180,000 or so. It starts to fall. In fact, falls to a low under the first year of the Trump administration, the first time, rises through the Trump administration a little bit, then falls to a very low in 2021 around the COVID era. And Biden rises slightly through the Biden administration to 50,000 in 2024, and then skyrockets from 50,000 to 230,000 under this evil monster of a dictator, Donald Trump. Now, you might say, well, 230,000 doesn't sound like that much, but there's so much more. There's so much more that first graph doesn't tell you. Only this second graph will tell you the truth. 230,000 arrested inside the country by ICE. How about 150,000 arrested by Border Patrol at the border? Other deportations, 120,000. Deported or denied entry at the border, 40,000 more self-deportations through the CBP app, and feels like we're stretching a little bit with this one, 70,000 people who were crew on ships that were not allowed to disembark. Which I guess that's a, hey, no, you stay on that ship. No fun weekend, no excursions, no tours on the little bikes that don't fall over. What are they called? Segways. No Segway tours for you of the city. You stay on that ship the entire time. Okay, that is apparently where we are. We're now measuring how many people have to stay on ships when they're at port. Okay, so that is the horrible record of Donald Trump. And it goes on, you know, same time. The number of people trying to cross the southwest border has fallen to record lows. Yep, just like this mean president would do. As a result, far fewer people were arrested and deported from the border than in the preceding few years. Well, that's kind of an interesting detail there, right? But, you know, that doesn't overwhelm that he's exported all brown people, which we learned earlier on the program. Even with the large increase in the interior enforcement and the slowdown at the border, the deportations of border crossers still made up about half the total. CBP directly deported or denied entry to 120,000 people. ICE deported another 150,000 people who were first arrested at the border. Some of those people, about 14%, were in detention awaiting their immigration proceedings before Mr. Trump took office. Okay, well, that's a small percentage, but 14% of the people that we're talking about here, you know, were already in custody before Trump even took office. Not sure you can blame him or give him credit for that, but we move on. I'm a little suspicious about how this is going, but okay. Another roughly 40,000 people returned to their countries after the self-deport thing we talked about. That brings the total number of deportations since Mr. Trump took office to 540,000. Do you believe that? 540? Never before in our history have we deported 540,000 people in a year, except for the last 2 years of the Biden administration. That brings the total number of deportations since Mr. Trump took office to 540,000, fewer than in the last 2 years of the Biden administration. when border crossings were at record highs. Those were 590,000 total deportations in 2023 and 650,000 in 2024. Wait a minute. I was told that Donald Trump was deporting all the brown people. And now I'm told that Joe Biden was deporting more people in the last 2 years of his administration than Donald Trump has? Well, certainly previous years he didn't do that, right? Unless, of course, you look at the chart here, and here's the chart. Now, what you're seeing here, if I might describe to our fancy podcast listeners, we appreciate you subscribing to the podcast, by the way. Deportations of people arrested at the border was, in the 400,000 range back during the Obama administration. During the first Trump administration was lower, in the 300,000 range probably on average. It did tick up over 500,000 in his last year in office. Why? Well, COVID. There's a lot more. We had a big program that deported people who may have been suspected of having COVID-19 or didn't go through the proper channels, having all the tests and everything done. The COVID era expulsions route rose to 1.25 million in Joe Biden's first year, along with regular deportations. That number stayed at about 1.2 million the next year, finally dropped down to about 900,000 in the third year of the Biden administration, and then at 650,000 in the last year. Now it's dropped to 260,000 during Trump. I don't feel like the news has reflected reality. Now, I appreciate the New York Times not hiding that. Okay, again, this is where we are with the media, where I have to actually thank them for not actively hiding something that dismantles their narrative. So I will give them credit for that. However, they've had an entire year of building the narrative that they should be held responsible for. And you might say, well, I mean, they must have explained this. They must have addressed why they've been panicking about immigration this entire time. And now we find out that actually the numbers were down from the Biden administration. There must be an explanation. They must have attempted an explanation. And you, if you asked that question, if you said that phrase, you would be correct, because they did. Are you ready for it? Under Mr. Trump, immigration arrests and deportations are much more visible. Oh, they're more visible. Now, how many times have you personally, I'm asking you this question, I want you to internalize it. As you're driving, as you're listening to, you're on a treadmill, you're listening to your podcast in your awesome Raycon headphones, and you think to yourself, hey, self, how many actual illegal immigrants have I personally seen be deported? And if you're like me, the answer might be none. Now, you might be in an area where you do see this. Maybe you're in a more urban area. Maybe you're hanging out at Home Depots all the time, and everybody out in front has been arrested. But that's just one area. How are you aware that this is happening all over the country? Part of it is that Donald Trump and Kristi Noem brag about it. That's part of it. But part of it would also be because of the coverage of the media, which would make those incidents far more visible. How do you see events happen that don't occur in front of you? You've got eyeballs to see your surroundings. How do you know they happen in Montana or Illinois or Portland or Seattle? How did you know about that shooting of Ms. Good? How did you know about that? Well, the media was very much putting it in front of your face constantly. So the things that are more visible to you pretty typically come from the media, who's complaining about how visible they've become. Under Mr. Trump, immigration arrests and deportations are much more visible and disruptive to communities across the country. The administration has also aggressively publicized its enforcement actions with a steady stream of slickly produced videos, memes, and mugshots. In the past, ICE made most of its arrests in partnership with local jails and prisons, quietly taking into custody immigrants who had already been arrested by another law enforcement agency. And you might pause there. Let's say you're on the left. You might pause there and say, see, this is the thing. previous administration, sure, they might be deporting more people, but they're doing it in a nice way, right? They're doing it kindly and calmly behind closed doors so we don't see it, because the problem doesn't exist if we don't see it. Have you noticed how much more visible Donald Trump seems to be in this particular realm? And you might think that. And if you're on the left, that's probably where your thinking stops. You probably don't think about, well, why? Why would the president choose, instead of just arresting them or taking them and deporting them out of a prison, which would be very easy to do, why would they choose to go door to door? Why would they choose to go to a Home Depot and arrest people when they could just go to the prison, the local prison that has all these people behind bars, and just take them out? That seems so much easier. Why would they do that? You know why? Hatred of brown people. That's why. Or could it possibly be a slightly different reason? Arrests in jails and prisons went up over the past year, but the increase was far exceeded by the growth in what ICE calls at-large arrests, the apprehensions of immigrants on the streets, the courthouses and homes, and the businesses. These quadrupled to 150,000 and made up a majority of immigration arrests in 32 states and in Washington, D.C. And that is true. Look at this chart. You see a rise. And what you see, though, at the beginning of this, before Donald Trump gets into office, is the orange line, which represents arrests at prisons and jails, higher than the red line, which talks about arrests inside of communities. Why would that be? Have you thought about it? Have you figured that out yet? They were most common in states like California, Illinois, and New York, where local governments have passed laws blocking local jails and prisons from transferring people to ICE custody. Got it? So in the past, when Biden was in office, he would just take them gently from the prisons where they already were for committing other crimes and take them out and deport them quietly so they were far less visible. But when Trump has got into office, what they've done is to say to ICE, we're not working with you, you're the Gestapo, so we're not handing these people over to you anymore. Therefore, they must be arrested in communities. But this is Donald Trump's fault somehow. I want to make sure you understand that. By the way, here's the map of the actual places. This is the states where you see a lot of the at-large arrests. Where are they? Washington, Oregon, Illinois, New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, some degree Pennsylvania and Alaska, which are a purple state and a red state, but almost all bright blue states. California and Minnesota also in the orange in that particular map. These are blue state policies preventing these nice, easy, not so visible arrests of illegal immigrants and deportations. The rate of deportations of people with a violent criminal conviction or other record has doubled, while the rate of people with no criminal record has gone up more than six times. And you might say, well, wait a minute. Wow, that sounds terrible. At least that part's bad. Sure, your other nonsense, Stu. I got it. You're just shilling for the president. But there you got something, right? Yeah, sure, the criminals have been deported at a double high rate. By the way, shouldn't that be something we all cheer? Just want to make sure I understand that. But the non-criminals have been deported at a rate six times higher. First of all, I've got news for you. If you're an illegal immigrant, the first step you took into the country was a crime. That is actually the crime, that little first step, that indicates the word illegal in the title, illegal immigrants. So you can say all you want that it's not a crime. You could argue, well, it's not really a crime. If you really look at it, it's not really, really illegal. It's just kind of illegal. You can come up with all the justifications that you like on that front, but you know exactly what we're talking about. But separate from that, I want to give you those numbers as well. People in the U.S. for four or more years, Trump is deporting them at a higher rate, from 1,300 per month to 3,500 per month. I guess he just doesn't think committing the crime for a longer period of time is worth much to keep you in the country. Potential dreamers have increased. Children up five, six times, from 10 to 60. What about if you have a past violent conviction? Well, from 790 to 1,100. with other past convictions from 2,300 to 3,900, with criminal charges that are pending from 750 to 2,700, with no criminal record, though, 280 to 2,100. Now, of course, again, I note the criminal record part I don't agree with. That's a BS claim. But if you see the overall majority of people here, they do have a criminal record. Yes, it's gone up six times, but six times in a smaller category from a smaller number. You've got about, I don't know, less than 2,000 extra people per month with quote unquote no criminal record, when you're talking about thousands and thousands of people with past violent convictions, with other convictions, with pending criminal charges. The overwhelming majority of these deportations are people with criminal records outside of them just being here illegally. So where do we end this? I'll end it with this one. Experts generally agree that Mr. Trump's policies have started to shrink the population of undocumented immigrants. By the way, that's good. And it's something that he promised. But they disagree about how much and about whether the much larger overall immigrant population is still growing. Growing is the word I just said. Growing. Now, there is some disagreement. The Brookings Institution had it a little bit smaller in the immigration population. The actual official numbers show it higher. But again, for a person who hates all immigrants, just except for the one he married, but the person who hates all immigrants may very well have gone through a year where he's been deporting every brown person available and has ended up with more immigrants in the country than when he started. That's the hatred of this president, apparently. And wow, what a fascinating time to be alive. I, again, give the New York Times a little bit of credit of actually highlighting these numbers, which, by the way, dismantle everything they've been saying for the past year. But they should also be held responsible for what they've been saying over the past year. Being an illegal immigrant is not allowed in this country. If you are here illegally, you should be removed. That is how the system works. If you want to come here, I know there is some disagreement on the right even on this. If you want to come here legally, I myself welcome you here. I'm glad you're here. In most circumstances, we have to be better at making sure we pick the right people to come with the right qualifications and issues that do not make the country any worse. We want to make immigrants to make us better. If you're coming here to make us better, you believe in this country, you love this country, welcome. Just come here legally. That being said, if you're here illegally, if you've committed other crimes, if you've committed already and have been convicted of past violent offenses like child molestation and homicide, people we've already highlighted on the show multiple times, then get out. And I don't care how visible it is that you're removed. Let us know. I'm fine with it. The American people need to understand this information and digest it a little bit more, because if they're making decisions based on the day-to-day coverage, they're going to wind up making the wrong ones. A good night doesn't have to cost you the next day. I will say, occasionally, we'll have an adult beverage and enjoy an adult beverage myself or a couple weeks out from the Super Bowl. That might be the week I enjoy the most adult beverages. And I, though in the morning, especially as I have put on a few years and pounds, but also years in my life, I want to wake up feeling normal. I want to wake up ready to go. And that's why I start with ZBiotics pre-alcohol. This is something I just discovered actually at the Super Bowl. I think it was last year. You got to try this stuff if you ever have a few drinks, because ZBiotics has it's a pre-alcohol probiotic drink. It's the world's first genetically engineered probiotic invented by PhD scientists to help with the rough days after drinking. Here's basically how it works. When you have a couple drinks, it gets converted into unwanted byproducts in your gut. And the buildup of that byproduct, not the dehydration, you might think, it leads to some, tough mornings, shall we say. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that is designed to break that byproduct down. You got to do this, and this is before you even have your first drink. You have the pre-alcohol before your first drink of the night. Then you drink responsibly, you hydrate, you do all the things, get some sleep, do the things, and then you wake up the next day and actually enjoy it. How about that? If you're ready to try this, I will be bringing a supply to the Super Bowl here in a couple of weeks. Go to zbiotics.com/stew. Zbiotics.com/stew. You get 15% off your first order when you use the code STEW at checkout. Plus, it is backed by a 100% money-back guarantee, so give it a shot. I've done that. It's worked for me. There's no risk involved, though. If it doesn't work for you, your money is back. Subscriptions are available as well for maximum consistency. Remember, head to zbiotics.com/stew. Zbiotics.com/stew. Use the code STEW at checkout. Get 15% off. Happy to welcome Drew Holden back to the program. He's the managing editor of Commonplace and also the author of Holden Court, the newsletter, which you can find at drewholden.substack.com. Be sure to check it out. Drew, how's it going?
Stu, it's going well, sir. How are you doing?
Doing well. Tell me about the new gig, first of all.
Well, yeah, so I am... Done your show a bunch talking about my Substack, right? I do a lot about the media. I'm also the editor, the managing editor at Commonplace, which is a new magazine from American Compass. We launched last year. We just had our 1 year anniversary. I'm trying to do a little bit more where I kind of bridge the two rivers a little bit and talk more about Commonplace. I think we have an excellent publication, but I wanted to make sure that your viewers were familiar with it and knew that when I'm talking to you, when I'm, you know, all this stuff, all this energy, all these pieces that I've got kind of floating around my head, it's not just from the Substack. It's not just because I spend too much time on Twitter. I promise there's a real thing that I also get paid 9 to 5 to do.
That's great. Yeah. So check it out. Commonplace. Very cool. I wanted to start, Drew, if we could, with a bit of media criticism. I was just engaging with just a moment ago, which was on the deportations situation. There's a big story in the New York Times that came out. I want to give you two pieces of it that I just highlighted, but I want to highlight them again because it's so insane. After everything we've heard about Donald Trump's immigration policy, these two paragraphs stick out to me in the New York Times. 40,000 people returned to their country because of the self-deport CBP app thing. That brings the total number of deportations since Mr. Trump took office to 540,000. Fewer than in the last 2 years of the Biden administration, which was 590,000 to 650,000. They go through this case to say, oh, well, these are much more visible, the one that Trumps are doing, though. They're right there in these communities. They're not just taking these people nicely out of jails like what President Biden was. And then we get this paragraph a little bit later on. The in-community arrests were most common in states like California, Illinois, and New York, where local governments have passed laws blocking local jails and prisons from transferring people to ICE custody. This dismantles the entire year of narratives, Drew, and they're just laying it out for us.
It's unbelievable, Stu. I mean, the idea that somehow this could have been done easier and better has just now occurred to the New York Times, which is really wonderful, I think, for people who care about whether or not people are in this country legally. I think it is perhaps valuable the New York Times has caught on that there might be other things that are preventing people who should be deported from being deported. But you're right, for the entirety of Trump's first term, for the duration now of his second term, the narrative has been, look at him doing all these awful, horrible things he doesn't have to do because he's mean and it's mean-spirited. When in reality, as even the Times now occurs to them, states are waging war against the admin to prevent them from doing these things that they ought to be doing. And the Times somehow is upset that Trump hasn't deported enough people. It is preposterous. It is perplexing. But you would think, I almost wonder if sometimes these pieces, they have one editor for one segment of it and another editor for another, and they just don't talk to each other, right? Like within the same piece, you get this terrible internal contradiction. And this seems to be another one of those. It's like, guys, come on.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And I will say it's not without consequence, right? When you convince an entire country that the Gestapo is coming for them on a night-to-night basis, the SS is right around the corner, you get incidents like we've seen in Minneapolis. And you have an entire situation where there's a group of people who are convinced, that they're basically, in World War II and the Nazis are coming from them. And they're acting accordingly in some ways, which is terrifying because that's not accurate.
Yeah, I think this talk of fascism, right? This is something that started under Trump's first term. We see it a lot now in his second term, particularly tied to deportation. What ICE is doing, there's this concern that, oh, these bad, evil people, these ICE agents, they're the boot, the jackboot of fascism is coming for these communities in Minnesota. And there's never any interest in getting beyond these like scary scenes of these guys. They've got guns, they've got masks. What could they be doing? You know, there's a great one that just happened the other day on Twitter. You had all of these advocates out in Minnesota who are protesting that a man was pulled in the dead of the Minnesota winter into the street to be arrested. And, you know, ICE was knocking on his door. Then they opened it up and they pulled him out. And it turns out he had two people who he was protecting, he was shielding in there, who were illegal immigrants. One of whom I believe had been convicted of murder. The other was a pedophile. He was a child rapist. And ICE had standing deportation orders for both of these guys. And it's like the sides you think you have, the side you think you are on and the side you think you're opposing, you misunderstand both of them terribly. And I think you're right. Like the other, it's not just a matter of like, oh, people get things wrong and now all these people are misunderstanding. You have people who are actively attacking ICE agents. You have people who are deliberately stopping the deportation of people with standing deportation orders who should be deported from this country. But I think we can all agree. And I think the most dangerous aspect of this is that you have violence perpetrated against these people. Because if you are of the belief that this is the Gestapo, that this is the SS, that you are hiding Anne Frank in your attic and the people coming to get her must be the Nazis, why wouldn't you take more direct action? Why wouldn't you do something dangerous? Why wouldn't you do something violent? And if you spin people up on these narratives, this end of the world is ending, democracy is dying, you're going to have more reactions like this.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Of course, you get rewarded afterward. You become the hero of the story if you are resisting, even if, terrible outcomes happen. And a lot of times they just leave this stuff out or at least push it down in the article. You had a good example from, I think it was the New York Times, where not in the top paragraph where they tell the story, not in the second paragraph, but at the end of the third paragraph, this is what you hear when the officer caught up to him. Ms. McLaughlin said he began to resist and violently assault the officer. She said two people came out of a nearby building along with the man being sought and attacked the officer with a snow shovel and a broom handle. Like these are basic things. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day who's like, hey, when you drive a car at cops, that used to just be called suicide by cop. Right?
Yep.
Now we're expecting the police officer to just either get run over or, you know, I don't know, massage the culprit until it's over. This is it's insane standard for the police officers, and they're not telling us the truth, at least not up front.
That's the thing that I think really kills me is that they're deliberately burying it, right? The facts are reported in, and this happens a lot, I think, Stu, in the media, where there is an inconvenient fact for the narrative. And in a lot of cases, people say, oh, the media didn't talk about this. In many cases, they did, right? It's just way further down. It is not the thing that got the headlines. It's not the way the story is told. It's not the framing for all these articles. And so to your point, you know, the story you just mentioned, the New York Times ran a story, a ton of other outlets did too, that a migrant, it's always the term migrant, a migrant was shot in the leg by ICE in Minnesota. That was the headline, right? And it's inflaming tensions and there's all these things going on and it's dangerous and it's scary. And why would ICE shoot somebody in the midst of all of these things? Obviously it's just throwing a match onto a powder keg. And then you read, if you read the story, so one of the things I always have to do, I think, in the kind of the self-appointed role I have with the media gatekeeping or guardkeeping at least, is I read these stories. And so in these stories, it's 4, 5, 6 paragraphs down. Oh, this guy and a couple of his friends or maybe family members attacked the ICE agent who fired in self-defense and shot the guy in the leg, right? That's the real story. That's the thing that actually matters. That's the thing that's happening on the ground. But instead, people look at it and they say, oh, ICE is shooting people in Minnesota. This is horrible. Why are we allowing this to happen? It's Trump. He's evil. And that's the narrative that's created by all of these things.
Yeah, it really is. And you bring up the reaction to it, which is the inflaming tensions narrative. Mm-hmm. This is really common from the media. And you point this out, and I think it's a good point. You have a situation where someone breaks the law, right? Then an ICE agent goes to arrest them, whether it's an illegal immigration violation or some other unrelated crime. They go and arrest them. But in between those two things, the media is telling you over and over and over again, the SS is coming. These people are terrible. Yep. You have to defend these poor, innocent people. Then when something happens, an incident occurs during this arrest, something goes terribly wrong. The framing often is the inflammation of tensions caused it. It's like, well, what inflamed those tensions? And then we see after the incident, it's people like Jacob Frey who go out in front of the city of Minneapolis and say, and they start swearing, of course, because that's what makes them cool. But
yes,
also,
that's the thing
you have to do. But also, like they say, basically, we have to push these people out. You have to stand up against them. You have to fight back against them. And they're never treated with this idea that they're inflaming tensions at all.
Right. And it's, you know, I think Tim Walz, for all the things that he is a perfect example of this phenomenon, right? Just the other day, this was maybe a week ago, he gave this big address about how awful Trump was and how ICE needs to get out of Minnesota yesterday. And he had this one line that I think really stuck in my head where he said, the state of Minnesota finds itself at war with the federal government.
Wow.
The leader of the state of Minnesota is saying, we are at war with the federal government. You want to talk about inflaming tensions? You want to talk about escalating things, of behavior that is kicking up kind of the ante in all of these things? That's what it is. A state saying, we will not work with you. We will not cooperate with you. We will not allow agents to carry out the furtherance of federal laws. No, we are at war with you. That language, and that's coming from the governor. Right? That is the governor of the state saying, we were at war with the federal government. Of course, activists are going to pick up that mantle and say, we were at war with the federal government. We were at war with ICE. And then a week later, Trump says, all right, I'm going to mobilize the National Guard. I'm going to federalize the National Guard. And Walz goes out and says, we really need to turn down the temperature, is the language he used. Like, have you talked to Tim Walz a week ago? Because he had something else to say about it.
He was advocating for a civil war 6 days ago, and now you're saying we have to turn the temperature down.
Yeah, it's insane. Like you're throwing the match in time and time again. And I believe me, I wrote a piece for Commonplace actually a few months ago, maybe about a year ago now, about the need to turn down the temperature, which feels almost silly to talk about in the light that I did then. This is, you know, in early 2025, to just be like, we need to be a little bit more sensible, a little bit more reasonable. I think those things are valuable, right? Like the mm-hmm. conclusion the media comes around to at the end of the day, like we need to take the temperature here down for everyone's sake. I agree with, but you've got to be able to look at in the mirror and at your allies and say, we have been throwing smoke bombs and pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails at something that was once kind of stable. And we have to reckon with that if we're going to get to a point where we're turning down the temperature one day.
Mm. Let me hit this last one. We have about 30 seconds here, Drew. You highlighted this because it's not only just the way we're talking about it. It's even when the conservatives are the victims of one of these things, they're still mm-hmm. the problem. Protest at Minnesota church that we all watched over the weekend adds to tension over ICE tactics. So it's ICE's fault. It's conservatives' fault for having protests happen at their own church services.
At their own church services, and then following the worshipers out to their cars and yelling at them, right? Like, you want to talk about the left and their safe spaces? Like the idea that there's nothing sacred, I think, to these protesters, right? You don't protest at a church; it's preposterous. You can protest the government, you don't protest at the church.
Yeah,
but you're right. There were other outlets that did this exact same thing. So at the New York Times, we just showed that one at WAPO. Latest flashpoint over Trump's immigration crackdown. Always. It has to be Trump. Trump has to be the bad guy. There are no other victims except the people who are victims of what Trump is doing. It is a terrible way to report on what's happening. It is a disservice to journalism, and it's a disservice to this country.
Yeah, and I'll say, too, the poor kid that was crying in the pews that I saw some video of, this would be the centerpiece of every new mainstream news story if the opposite was happening. If it was an ICE arrest and the kid was crying, it'd be everywhere. Apparently not the way this goes. Drew Holden, managing editor of Commonplace. Be sure to check that out, and as well as Holden Court. It's a newsletter at drewholden.substack.com. Drew, appreciate all your work. Thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Stupid.
It is January 20th, which means it's been one singular solitary year, just one, since Donald Trump became president again. And he has packed more into that year than I think the last 1,000 years of human civilization. It's really legitimately incredible. Throw out for a second whether you like these policies or you don't like these policies. I imagine you like a lot of them. Some of them you might not like as much. But bottom line is, a lot of crap has gone on. That I will say. A lot of stuff has occurred in the past year. It's only been 1 year into Trump's second term. The seismic shifts, you know, stuff like foreign policy, as I mentioned, that's been pretty popular. Immigration, not quite as much. DOGE was not particularly popular, although it was, you know, most of the efforts I liked. I don't think we really got to the high-end hopes we had there. Economic policies, hasn't been too much there outside of tariffs and the Big Beautiful Bill. The Big Beautiful Bill was a big deal, but it was really more locking in something that already existed. Changes to the White House. We're even knocking down wings of the White House now. So it's been a lot to remember. And he's not slowing down. Trump is sharing leaked texts between him and a leader. AI mock-ups of us taking over Greenland and Canada. And he vows there's no going back on Greenland. That's going on as well. And Trump has threatened a 200% tariff on French wines, as Macron reportedly snubbed the Board of Peace seat. So Board of Peace in Gaza offered one seat to Macron. Macron said no, so he's getting a 200% tariff potentially on French wines. I will say, like, when it comes to the justification for these tariffs, Trump's not really even trying anymore. There's no more like, hey, I don't know, it's a pretty serious situation. We've got an emergency. We need to use IEPA. Even though IEPA doesn't mention tariffs at all, we have to use it, and it's an emergency. Now it's like, that guy pissed me off. 48% tariffs. He pissed me off more. 69% tariffs. 69 is a funny number. 69% tariffs. That's like where we are right now. He's sort of flaunting it in the face of the Supreme Court. That ruling due any day was the most recent day being this morning, as they had a decision day, but nothing on tariffs. My assumption is usually the big cases, they kind of wait until the end. We will see if that's the case here. And a story that I absolutely love from the New York Post. Look, when you get a gig, sometimes you don't always want to go. You don't always want to show up. You don't always want to be part of it. You know, maybe you get a gig, you're just kind of collecting a paycheck or collecting the esteem. Well, Bernie Sanders got a gig like that from a Holocaust museum. He's on the board of it, and he has now skipped every meeting, every single meeting, for 18 years. That's because he cares about the Jews too much. That's why. 18 years he has skipped the meetings for the Holocaust Museum he is on the board of. Now, again, being on a Holocaust Museum board is, you know, a prestigious position, right? Like, something that, you know, really holds some weight to say, hey, like, this is one of the most important events that's ever happened in human history, certainly in modern history. And, you know, to be there to make sure that this is all going right, this is an important gig. He gets the gig, he holds it for 18 years, and never once goes to one meeting. Now, I don't like that on the Holocaust Museum board. I will say, if they ask me to do the show here, but not do any shows for 18 consecutive years and still send me the paychecks, just so you know, Blaze TV, I'm in. When you sleep better, you have more energy. You handle stress a little bit more calmly. The goals that usually feel a little overwhelming can feel manageable. It's all true. Sleep really helps. You can start this year with CBD from CB Distillery. Why? Well, over 90% of CBD users say they sleep better when they use CBD, and that's a hard stat to ignore. When your sleep improves, everything else tends to follow. And CB Distillery isn't just about sleep. You can make CBD solutions for all sorts of stuff. They've got targeted solutions for stress, mood support, even soreness after workouts. One of the cool things they do on the site is you can shop by benefit. So it's not like you're like, oh, what product and what, you know, what, how does this help? You can just look for the benefits. Hey, I'm having trouble sleeping. Find all the products that might help you with that. It's straightforward, it's practical, and it's built around real life problems people are actually trying to solve. What also matters is quality. Every CB Distillery product is premium, third-party tested, and made without artificial dyes or fillers. They've already helped more than 2 million customers, and they back everything with a 100% money-back guarantee, which tells you a lot about their confidence in what they make. So if you're ready to start the year off right, go to cbdistillery.com. Use the code STEW, 25% off, cbdistillery.com. The code is STEW. Specific product availability depends on individual state regulations, of course. Check it out now, cbdistillery.com. The promo code is STEW. The number one book on all of Amazon is the new one by Peter Schweizer. Came out today. We'll talk to him on tomorrow's program all about it. See you then.